The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. 4 minutes past nine, Thursday, the 22nd of January, 2026. You're very welcome along to The Greg Hughes Show here on Highland Radio. It's great to have you on board. We've got a packed 2 hours for you. Loads coming up on the show. And we want you involved in the conversation throughout. We have our WhatsApp and text lines open to you right now. 086 60 25000, that is the WhatsApp and the text line. Feel free to use those lines, by the way, if you're listening to the podcast or the overnight repeat. We want you involved in the convo too. It doesn't have to be just when we're live. If you want to call us, we love taking your calls as well. It's a great way to stay in touch. Not everyone texts, and that's why the calling option is there for you, so you can have your say, share your stories. 074 91 25000, and some of you like emails too. We love them. Comments at highlandradio.com. Don't forget to watch the show if it suits you to do so. You can do so now live or watch back later. If you're at home, get us up on your smart TV or your Fire Stick. We're on the YouTube app, Highland Radio Ireland, across Facebook and on the X platform as well. Mercosur dominating the locals and the nationals. It's been put on ice, and you do wonder if it's ever going to get over the line. MEPs meeting in Brussels on Wednesday morning voted to refer the Mercosur deal to the European Court of Justice in a closed ballot. That's on the front of the Tyrconnell Tribune. I'll get to that in the Nationals as well a little later on. But interesting, John McAteer and the team have broken down how many in Donegal may be liable for carers' tax. And reading on here, in what is a huge shock to the lives of many families, carers, more than 34,000 across the country, are being hit with tax bills after Revenue got access to data on their payments. It's estimated that around 3,500 carers in Donegal are deemed eligible for tax. And we're still trying to ascertain, you know, how many carers are taxpayers and how many, or how lenient Revenue will be in terms of back tax. We still haven't great clarity in relation to that. The Donegal News reports that a pregnant woman has told of her frustration after she missed a scan appointment in Letterkenny University Hospital because there were no available car parking spaces. The woman, who did not wish to be named, had an appointment for her first trimester screening and blood tests in recent days. However, despite leaving her home in plenty of time to make the car journey to LUH for the morning appointment, when she arrived at the hospital, she found there were no parking spaces. And by the time she got parked, the woman told of how she missed her original appointment slot by only a matter of minutes and had to endure a two-hour wait. The Derry News reports that a Derry man has been sentenced for putting father's body in a fridge, or fridges. We reported on this yesterday, of course. A 56-year-old man who admitted preventing the lawful burial of his 86-year-old father, who died in his family home in July 2024, has been jailed for 3 years at Derry Crown Court. We'll start with the Farmers' Journal, because they've been very active on the Mercosur deal and all matters relating to farming, of course. And the clarification of the ratification of the EU-Mercosur trade deal could be delayed for up to 2 years following a vote by European Parliament on Wednesday. MEPs voted to refer the Mercosur trade deal to the European Court of Justice for an opinion, a move which delays the deal coming into effect. The result of the tight vote, with 334 MEPs in favour of the motion, 324 against and in abstentions, and 11 abstentions, was welcomed by farm organisations in the EU. IFA President Francis Gorman said that the decision was the right one, adding that MEPs had been lobbied morning, noon and night, and that had worked. The farming lobby is a very powerful lobby, and we've seen that. You know, what other area of work or what have you would mobilise and find themselves blocking up the streets of Brussels? Only the farmers, really, I can think of. But there are those who think this is terrible news, that this is going to stifle growth in the Irish economy. The Mercosur deal was not just about meat, of course, it was about exports. And we would have benefited greatly with boosted exports, we're told. You know, tariffs on certain products being eliminated, opening up new markets in South America. And we will probably hear some of those views on the show a little later on. Well, Taco Trump is what they call him. Trump always chickens out. That's what TACO stands for. And he does, and he's done it again. He's done a full U-turn on his wish to take over Greenland in its entirety. That being said, people who want to detract from him call him TACO, but he's got what he wanted. So what he does is, it's like borrowing money off someone. You say, can I borrow 100 quid? But you only want to borrow 20, right? So he's, can I borrow 100 quid? And they go, I don't have 100 quid. No, I'd love to help you out. All right, can I have 20? And you go, all right, there's 20. That's what Trump does, really, in terms of his negotiations. US President Donald Trump has dropped his threat to impose tariffs on several European countries over their stance on Greenland, saying he'd reached a deal with the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, we know them as NATO, on the island's future. Based upon this understanding, I will not be imposing the tariffs that were scheduled to go into effect on February 1st. So he's not getting Greenland, but what he is doing, he's getting the ability to locate equipment there in conjunction with Denmark. Also, to certain areas will be sort of sovereign US land within Greenland. And also, he's going to have access to rare minerals. Some of that he could have had anyway, but he will see that as a victory, and I suppose that is what it is. In the Irish Daily Mail this morning, a judge refused to use a new name chosen by a transgender teenager, and in a separate case stated another male-identified teen was biologically a girl, a new report has revealed. The comments were made during two cases in the Dublin District Court last year where the judge considered plans for the aftercare of teenagers due to age out of the care system as they turned 18. The cases were reported on and published this week by the Child Law Project, which attends child protection cases in the family courts, which are not open to the public. In the first case, a social worker described how one of the children was gender transitioning from a girl to a boy, now going by a boy's name. Well, the social worker spoke of how the child was experiencing gender dysmorphia and was refusing to go to school. The court heard that the child was enrolled in a boys' school. The child was undergoing therapeutic interventions at Treehouse, a trauma-focused therapeutical service for children, and was really benefiting from that intervention, the social worker said. But the judge insisted that the child be referred to by their original female forename. He read from a psychologist's report before the court. In her report, the psychologist rejected the ideological label of transgender children identification. So it's an interesting case there, which is highlighted in most of the papers. Yesterday, it was revealed that a total of 25 foreign sex offenders have been booted out of Ireland in the last year. This is in the Irish Daily Mirror. Figures released on Wednesday by the Department of Justice show that Gardaí have tracked down and expelled the rapists and abusers since the special operation was set up last year. Codenamed Moonridge, it was set up by Garda bosses last year to identify foreigners living here who have been convicted of sex crimes. Two questions I'd be interested in relation to this. How complete is the database that they might have on potential people with sex crimes background? How robust is the information they have in relation to this? And if 25 foreign sex offenders have been booted out of Ireland, how many remain? Those are questions I think it would be interesting to find out if they do have a number, right? So if they know, well, there's another 75, let's just say hypothetically, would we not need to know that? The same way you'd hope that if it were, sex offenders living and born here, you'd hope to know. Well, the operations seized detectives from the Garda National Immigration Bureau identifying and finding offenders who will then be either deported or, if they are European Union nationals, hit with so-called EU removal orders. So 25, is that the majority? Is that the thin end of the wedge? I don't know. Let me see here now. I've lost where I was at with these papers. That's my fault. On to the Irish Independent now. And this is a story from the United States. A Florida mother who gave birth last month is suing an IVF clinic as the baby she gave birth to has no genetic relationship to either parent, according to a lawsuit. The Fertility Center of Orlando was named in the lawsuit as a defendant. The lawsuit claims that the couple, noted as John and Jane Doe in the filing, began using the center's services in March 2025. The woman had an embryo implanted that she believed contained both the plaintiff's DNA. In early December, The woman gave birth to a beautiful, healthy female child, the lawsuit states. The lobby known as Baby Doe, in court documents appeared to be a different race, however. While both Jane Doe and John Doe are racially Caucasian, i.e. white, Baby Doe displayed the physical appearance of a racially non-white child, the lawsuit states. Which is a very, very tricky situation, isn't it? What might you do in that situation? Maybe you don't even want to think about it, right? So they went down the IVF route. They believed that the man's DNA, shall we say, was injected into the woman's DNA, and that was then implanted into her. She carried the child for 9 months, gave birth, and as it turns out, not only is it not genetically related to them, but it's actually of a different race. So what would you do in that situation? Because I presume the maternal bond is there, right? Are they going to keep the child and seek damages? Or what might you do in that situation? It's like something out of a film, and I care not to think too much about things like that because they seem so unlikely to happen. But in that case, it did happen. And lastly, 4.2 million euro of your money is pocket money for prisoners. Inmates received 4.2 million euro in pocket money last year, courtesy of you, the taxpayer. An additional 583,000 was doled out to lags last year. I don't know why they use this English language, but anyway, maybe it's Irish too. Last year compared to 2024, while the amount of cash gifts received by prisoners from friends and family on the outside surged to over 8.4 million. Well, that's fine if they want to get money off family and friends. The boon has seen inmates, I don't know what a boon is, has seen inmates' prison bank balances more than double during the past 12 months, from 1.5 million to 3.2 million, according to records obtained under the Freedom of Information. All right, okay. Just to let you know before a break, there is a car broken down on the inbound right-hand lane of the dual carriageway into Letterkenny outside Kelly's Toyota Garage, causing a long tailback. So I think you're going to have a little bit of patience in that area. Ashley Nicol joins me on the programme now. Ashley, thank you for joining me. I do appreciate it.
Good morning.
Now, you're speaking on behalf of your friend Anna, and Anna's partner, Martin Tran, is missing and missing from County Donegal. We're going to be posting the picture as part of this piece we're doing now. It's on our socials, and we want everyone to have a look at that and help bring Martin home. Talk to us about the last time he was seen and what we know of his movements, etc.
Grand. So the last time I saw Martin was last Tuesday. He was around at my house, and then on Wednesday morning, he upped and left in his van, according to his partner, Anna. Now, I know he had been talking about doing a trip up to Donegal. However, Martin is a very organized individual, very experienced outdoor enthusiast, but it's very out of character that he wouldn't take his phone or his Garmin watch with him, which to me seemed very strange because he would never go out on a big hike without station or navigation system. The last transaction in Kilcar, we have an idea that he might be up in the Sleeve League area. And I suppose we're just issuing an appeal to anyone that may spot his van or anything to
okay,
to get
that. I just want to walk the listeners through this a little bit because it might trigger just a little, and I would have more sort of local information than you might. So his last card payment was on Sunday at Centra in Kilcar. So it's possible, isn't it? It's possible, isn't it, that maybe he used that as a springboard maybe to go off the grid? For whatever reason you might want to?
Possibly.
So what I'm trying to get at here possibly, is if people see, did he bring any camping equipment with him? Do you know?
His van is always fully stocked with all his camping equipment, so he would have had everything with him.
That is a red Volkswagen Caravelle. Is it okay for me to give the number the number plate? Is that okay, Ashley?
Yes, no, that's okay.
Okay, so it's 08C19052. So it's a red Volkswagen Caravelle. So just in case you've seen it in any car parks, parked up anywhere. Gardaí have been informed, haven't they? So I'm not sure if they've issued an official missing persons yet, but they are involved in this. So it's A, if you've seen the van, if you've had any contact with Martin after his last card payment at Centra in Kilcar. The concern is that he may be injured or he may be lost, and he could be in and around the Sleeve League areas or the Bluestack Mountains or any of those mountainous areas around there. Is there any indication, Ashley, that Martin, like, how would you describe his well-being in advance of him going missing?
Martin, to me, is a very happy guy. He's always very enthusiastic. He can be a little bit extreme in terms of, I suppose, his adventures. But our concern would be that this is very out of character, that he hasn't let somebody know. And the main concern would be, as you said, that he's had an injury or an accident and he doesn't have a form of communication. Now, I do know he's been speaking to me about his future plans and all that, so I wouldn't really be overly concerned about sort of, let's say, mental health issues or things like that. But yeah, as we said, myself and Anna are just more concerned that this is just very out of character for him.
Particularly the watch and the phone. As an experienced adventurer or climber or whatever you might want to describe him, those would be essential items, and the fact that he didn't or doesn't have them with him, obviously a further cause for concern.
Yes, no, definitely. Okay. As I said, I know Martin, I've been hiking with him, and that would be his number one go-to tool, is to have a backup navigation system if he's not too sure of you know, the direction he needs to go in.
Okay, well, I'm going to share the image and vehicle description on our socials. We're sharing it now as we speak, as we stream the show live, Ashley, and of course the news team will pick up on this. We've got eyes and ears right across the region here at Highland Radio, and we just hope that someone spots this red Volkswagen Caravelle 08C19052 or has seen Martin, who's quite distinctive in his features too. He would he would stand out a little. And also too, if he's listening, maybe he's listening, it just so happens to be, maybe he's sitting in a calf somewhere, I don't know. But people are concerned for him and just want to know he's well.
Grand, yeah, I know that would be it. Possibly wearing mostly dark clothing, black jackets, green trousers or blue jackets, light blue trousers. Blue hat or a black hat.
Okay, and if we hear anything, we're encouraging. Obviously, the first port of call is anyone to contact Gardaí, or if they pass on information to us, we'll pass it on to the authorities. I wish you, you good luck in this search, and that Martin is back with Anna and the rest of his family and friends really, really soon.
Grand. Well, thanks a million for all your help.
Okay. All right. We'll see what comes from it. 086 60 25,000. As I say, I just don't have it posted yet, but check out Highland social medias, and pictures of Martin are there, or our contact details, 086 60 25,000, even if you want us to put you in contact with someone else, if that makes sense. Very, very worrying, of course. Now, we may have a lead in relation to Martin, who is missing. We're chasing that up, and we'll bring you any details just as soon as we get them. Professor Deirdre Connolly is Principal Investigator of Can Work and joins me on the programme now. Good morning to you.
Hi, Greg. How are you?
I am good. Thank you very much for your time. Right. Now, talk to me about the latest Can Work research project.
Yeah, so thanks a million for asking, for inviting me to talk about it this morning. So Can Work is a project that we have developed. It's a return to work program that we designed in consultation with women with breast cancer, Greg. And the aim and the objective of the return to work program, it's an occupational therapy led program, and it's aimed at supporting women and preparing women with breast cancer for going back to work.
What are the challenges that you found or in relation to getting back into work?
They're multiple, to be honest, Greg. They range from difficulties with physical problems. So it could be Fatigue is a very severe long-term symptom after cancer treatment. It can be pain, it can be lymphedema. A lot of women have told us difficulty they experience with cognitive changes and challenges around things like concentration, multitasking. There's also the emotional impact of having a cancer and going back to work and trying to juggle, you know, that kind of and manage those psychological stress, anxiety, you know, worry around cancer recurrence. Confidence is another area that a lot of women experience is, you know, again, they've been through a very tough period with very severe treatments. And, you know, their whole world has been turned upside down. So their self-confidence has been affected. So there's a whole range of post-treatment impacts then that can make it difficult for some women or across the board, people with cancer going back to work.
Yeah, indeed. And I think this is really important too, because sometimes you get the impression that, you know, I'm cancer-free or, you know, we're all clear. And the person themselves know, right, okay, but what's next? But everyone around them thinks, well, that's it. The battle's won. The fight's over. Everything goes back to normal. But there are changes in a lot of people, and that doesn't tell the full story.
Yeah, and I think that's really important, Greg, and thanks for highlighting that, because a lot of these difficulties that people experience, they're not visible problems, you know, because, again, when you think about treatment and, you know, sometimes people lose their hair or they may have some kind of physical signs of their treatment after radiotherapy. But then once they're gone, they're again, like, as you say, people think, God, you look great. You look fine. And, you know, it's great you're back at work. But then, you know, after a week or 10 days back at work, people forget, you know, your colleagues, your employer. And yet the person can be really struggling with a range of issues. So that's why we developed Can Work. And it is a unique program to support people. At the moment, our study is focusing on breast cancer, but we do hope to expand it. But it's a 6-week program, Greg, and it's online so that anybody from across the country can join. And it's 5 weeks group based, where we cover these difficulties and we give people strategies and also explain the underlying reasons for why they're experiencing some of these difficulties.
Yeah, and just in relation to those participating, like, what about employers? Because, you know, some are going to be fantastic and get an understanding. And it might be that the CEO themselves had breast cancer, right? And that with that comes an understanding as an example. And then others might be terrible, right? Because not necessarily because they're bad companies or bad people, but because there's a gap in information. So what can CanWork, is CanWork actively working with businesses to maybe give some, you know, to give a plan that can be implemented or what do you see in the future, if not currently?
Sure. So a couple of things there. So one of the things that we do as part of CanWork is that we give the person a letter that they can share with the employer. So the women have fed back to us that that has been an excellent resource and the employers have really appreciated having it because, as you say, they don't always know what they need to do for employees coming back into the workplace. The other thing to say is that there is work going on and we're collaborating. CanWork is establishing a national stakeholder of work and cancer. And we're working with other organisations like Purple House in Bray, who are our cancer support centre, who are setting up a training programme for employers in terms of educating them on how to support people coming back into the workplace with cancer. So there's a lot of work going on in this area at the moment, Greg, which is super because it has been a very unaddressed area for people with cancer. And they have, you know, they time and time again, people say to us, oh, you know, we're told kind of, oh, your treatment is over, you're doing well, you've got the all clear, and off you go. And things like going back to work aren't talked about. They're not discussed in terms of maybe, you know, going back on a part-time basis or asking the employer for special accommodations around maybe the type of work that they might do. So again, that's what people with cancer are looking
for. And all of this doesn't really capture either, you know, the potential difficulty that people might have in terms of promotional opportunities, career development, or the appetite for an employer to have them back in the workplace. That's all kind of a hidden element of this as well.
It's very, very tricky. And again, women have identified to us that they've been passed over for promotional purposes, that they are being left out of, if there's a new project coming into the workplace, something they would have previously been involved in. Assumptions are being made, you know, oh, you've had cancer, not sure you're able for this, you know, we'll just get somebody else. And then, you know, that does impact on your career development and impacts on your, again, your level of satisfaction, your self-esteem. So again, all of those things that, you know, we need to educate employees, employers, colleagues.
Okay, so you're halfway through the study. 174 women have all enrolled to date. The more women involved in this, the better, the more complete it is. 174 is a huge number, don't get me wrong, but the more, the merrier. And from all different areas too, because experiences can vary geographically as well. So is it too late for people to get involved in this project, or how do they get more information?
No, not at all. And just to again say, we have women from Donegal, but we'd love more women. The Cancer Support Centre, Cancer Care West Support Centre, John Donoghue has been fantastic in supporting us in this study. So just want to acknowledge that. But basically, yes, we need a wide national representation, Greg, for the study, if we want this to be implemented long term. So for women to get in touch with us, we have a website. So, and our contact details are on that. Our website is www.canwork.ie. Or the people can email us directly, info@canwork.ie.
Okay, Professor.
So please contact us. It doesn't oblige, you know, people aren't obliged. They can contact us, get some information, and then make a decision if they're going to participate or not. But we'd love that broad, wide representation on the study. It'll make a huge difference in terms of rolling out CanWork and making sure that it's available to everybody.
Okay, we'll stay in touch. Thank you very much indeed. That was Professor Deirdre Connolly there, Principal Investigator of CanWork. If you have any views in relation to that or any experience, 086 60 25000, that's the WhatsApp and text number, or alternatively you can give us a call on 074 91 25000. On the issue of traffic, I mentioned that one, that's okay. Hi, Greg. I just wanted to make others aware of the new Snapchat update that allows your photos taken on Snapchat to be used for AI purposes. I've turned it off as I'd be worried for my children's images to be used. To turn it off, go to settings, my privacy and data, then generative AI settings. So is that a case that they are the default is that you give Snapchat access to your images for research purposes? I'm not really quite sure. Ian Talbot is Chief Executive of Chambers Ireland. Good morning, Ian.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm good. Now, I think it was at the weekend, Chambers Ireland and the ICC released a press statement on MerseyCorps. We've really only heard one side of the MerseyCorps deal, and that primarily has come from farmers and elected reps advocating for farmers. I've tried to sort of put the other side across just in the interests of fullness of knowledge. We'll get to the deferral of the EU-Mercosur agreement, but from Chambers Ireland's perspective, the EU-Mercosur agreement would have been good news?
Yeah, absolutely. This would follow on from some of the other trade deals that the EU has agreed, such as the CETA agreement with Canada, which has proven very successful for exporting companies here, including sectors like the beef industry and cheese sector and so on. Very successful. But Mercosur opens up a new market of 295 million people and a growing middle class and growing wealth in that economy. And there's also the geopolitical aspects that we've seen, the uncertainty that prevails with North America at the moment. And we really need to find alternative markets for our products and services.
What do you think the message this sends out in relation to, you know, how we're treated into the future? As I say, we benefit greatly from being this open market, yet here we are blocking deals.
Yeah, it's not a great look, if I'm honest. And we really need to look at our place in the world at the moment. You know, the European Union has been extremely good to us. You know, our economy since we joined the EEC, as it was in 1973, has absolutely transformed. The EU stood behind us through, for example, the Brexit issues, which I know are still going on in some of the border areas about cross-border workers and things like that. But you know, EU stood behind us. And EU is now looking at areas like India. You know, 1.3 billion people have a potential market. So it's an enormous market for us for the future. For our exporters generally across the board. And I know this concerns, particularly in the beef and poultry sector. It was great news 2 weeks ago that the Taoiseach came back from China with the beef market opened up again. That's fantastic news. And the beef sector has done very well out of CETA as well. So I think, you know, the opportunities here are enormous. We're very concerned. We're very pleased to see some of the safeguards that have been implemented, or sorry, not implemented, but have been proposed both in the Mercosur agreement and also some of the commitments that the EU is making to the farming community in the future. So we think it's a good deal for the economy, and we think it's a very strong message to Europe that we are open for trade.
Right, but we voted against it as a country, and many MEPs voted for the Mercosur deal to be referred to the EU, to be referred to the European Court of Justice, which could mean a 1-2 year delay. That's not good news, surely, from your perspective.
Well, I think it's important that we be seen to conduct the democratic process properly. So if the MEPs have voted to send it to the European Court of Justice, that's absolutely fine. Let the European Court of Justice.
Well, some MEPs voted against. Some government MEPs voted against.
There was a mix. I think it was four of our MEPs voted in favour of this deal, and that again shows. I mean, I think that's a strength. It shows that our MEPs have the ability to assess individually, and they're not subject, for example, to a government whip on these things. So people have the ability to look and assess the arrangements themselves. And you know, our MEPs are on the ground in the European Parliament, in Brussels. They're talking to all the other MEPs. They're talking to MEPs across their various parties, the EPP, Renew and so on, and getting the sense from their equivalents in other countries. And I think, you know, they're doing a great job for Ireland. I think we don't talk enough about the positive impact our MEPs have and the things they're doing. I mean, they're working extremely hard over in Brussels. I spend plenty of time visiting the European Parliament and meeting them, and it's extraordinary how much work they're doing. Mm. They probably don't get a lot of credit for, probably not understood. There's a sense that a lot of stuff that happens in Europe, stuff that's been negotiated in Europe today, mightn't actually hit the Irish legislative books for 5 years.
Maybe it's a Northwest thing, because I'm not questioning how hard they work, but all we hear on Highland Radio is that they're opposed to this deal that you're so in favour of.
And this deal yesterday was just one point on the agenda of an awful lot of other things that they're looking at, including so much of our employment legislation. And of course, we've recently seen the nitrates derogation go through as well. So that was some very strong work by our MEPs and our government on that as well.
You still want, and you're confident, the Mercosur deal will pass, albeit delayed now. And if that means the destruction of the Irish farming industry, as those who are working in that industry, farmers, say it will, that's a price you believe is worth paying?
Well, Greg, first of all, we heard a lot of the same arguments back in 2016, 17, 18 around CETA. It hasn't come to pass. The beef numbers are 99,000 tons of beef, 50%, I think, of which will be frozen beef. It's the equivalent of a small steak per person per annum in the European Union. There's so many other markets, including the reopening of the Chinese market, for example. I'm no expert in the farming sector, but any negotiation, there's a balance and there's, if you like, mediation to find a solution that works for everybody.
MEP Kieran Mullooly has welcomed, of course, yesterday's decision by the European Parliament to refer the trade deal to the European Court. You described it as a pivotal moment for legal certainty, democratic oversight and the protection of European farmers. But as we've heard there from Ian, maybe the threat to Irish farmers is being overstated.
Good morning, Greg. Good morning to your listeners and good morning to Ian from
good
Strasbourg.
Morning. Good morning, Kieran. We've communicated on this topic as well.
We have indeed. I think what Ian is talking about is important there. I think there's a balance to be struck in this situation. And it's our job as MEPs to evaluate what's going on. So I suppose, firstly, if you look at the Mercosur situation and what this deal is about and the scale of it. In a context, say, of this week, Greg, and we had all this talk about US trade and EU trade, we do about 80 billion of trade with the United States of America. It is crucial. We do at the moment less than 570 million of trade with the Mercosur countries. And even going by the Commission's forecast, we were going to grow that by 0.25%, a quarter of 1%. So you can see why I have always said, in fact, that this trade deal has actually been overstated.
Okay, so why would we spend 20 years trying to get a deal over the line that would benefit this union by such a fraction? I mean, that doesn't make sense. Why would countries be pushing so hard? Why would so much time be taken up in the EU infrastructure over a nothing deal that one stroke of a pen from Donald Trump could wipe out 15 times over with a tariff raise?
Well, very simple, Greg. Do the sums again. I said about our 570 million and the trade increasing by 0.25%. You can take it from me that the German car industry, the Italians and the French, have a lot more than 570 million at stake here. They have been among the countries who've been pushing this for their own individual reasons, in the same way as I've been opposing it because of the threat it would pose to Irish farmers and to the rural Ireland in terms of the effect on our beef trade. That's what happens in Europe. Everybody speaks up for their corner at the end of the day, and 27 countries are involved in this, and that's my job to represent my constituency.
Of course, and you're only speaking up for farmers. What about the business people? What about the growth in our exports? What about the removal of tariffs in very important industries in this country that could see those industries grow? Where's your advocacy for the other side of this argument?
I'm pro-trade, Greg. I represent people like Abbott in your corner of the country, Pharma Jazz in Athlone, Alchemy, these companies who want to trade with South America. But they also have a fairly good vision of what the scale of that trade would be. And when I meet them, they don't say to me, and never had, Kieran, we must open the doors to South America. They say to me first and foremost, you know what you need to do, Kieran? You need to ensure we sort out the EU trade on pharmaceuticals. We need proper, faster regulation in terms of drugs. We need to get rid of the red tape, and that's where most of our business is done. These are the issues and the priorities that people in the pharma trade give to me. And you know what? I represent their views just
I'll come
as much
back
as
to you in a
farmers.
Moment. Ian Talbert, Chief Executive of Chambers Ireland, according to MEP Kieran Mullooly there, I mean, this deal is not that big a deal, really. Would you agree with that framing?
But you can argue any way you like on this. Expanding our markets is a good deal for Irish companies and for the European Union. And I suppose I mentioned earlier opportunities coming forward like the India agreement. The talk of having a paper on the India agreement before the end of the month, which is looming large. India is a market of 1.3 billion people. And I've not seen the nuances yet at the India deal. I guess we'll have to wait and see what Commissioner Sefcovic has got down on paper. But I worry that there's an overriding sense among the Irish population that trade somehow is a bad thing. And the rhetoric on trade at the moment is very negative. And we're very pro-trade, and we see Mercosur as part of
But
an
who do you think's
overall
been? I
thrust
mean,
by the European Union
the
to
very
expand
same
markets.
people that you spent 3 or 4 minutes praising are the very same people that aren't relating that message and have been speaking out against the Mercosur deal. We're getting our information from the MEPs and the farming groups.
I don't agree. I don't agree at all. I think, again, people are looking for sectors that matter to them. That's democracy at work. The voting in the European Union Parliament, the European Parliament yesterday, was very close. It reflects concerns, and the EU Commission has been trying to address those concerns and the extra safeguards and the extra financial commitments it's talking about on Mercosur to get that over the line. It's all a negotiation.
Kieran, how much of this was really referring this to the European Court, and how much of it do you think strategically was working out the numbers to kick this very controversial can down the road a couple of years?
I'll be honest with you, Greg. A lot of people were campaigning for a yes vote yesterday, so they could kick it down the road. An awful lot of people were doing that. But the key thing, reason why we were successful yesterday, is that there's a group of people in the middle in Europe who take the Treaty of the European Union, Article 2, seriously when it says we must respect the human rights of everybody in the Union. They voted yesterday because the procedures are there, the rules are there, and we've done it in the past. The Canadian trade deal, Greg, had to go back to Parliament in Dublin. It had to be referred to the courts eventually, and all of this had to be done by the European courts as well before we voted on it. And those are the rules, and we will stick to those rules as long as I'm here in Brussels. We make no apology for doing that. They are the rules, and we will vote accordingly to see that the rights of Irish people in Donegal and elsewhere are respected here.
Thank you very much indeed, MEP Kieran Mullooly. Did you want to say something? Sorry, Ian, I was just going to thank you for your time. Oh, I've actually got rid of him. My apologies. Kieran, take care of yourself. Thank you very much indeed. And Caroline, we might just pass on to Ian that I accidentally kicked him out. It wasn't my intention. All right, what's your takeaway from all of that? I think really what that means is Mercosur, I might be pronouncing it wrong all of the time, that conversation's kicked down the road. We're not going to hear about that for a while. A very astute listener here. Good morning, Greg. In relation to your comment on the beef deal, on the 7th of January, they've kept the receipts. You suggested Ireland would vote for it and the deal would go through. How wrong were you? Any comment on that? Yes, indeed, the next day. In fact, it was Kieran Mullooly that I was trying to, get a bet going. Because I was of the view, especially in relation to the comments that the Taoiseach had made the day prior in China, that we were going to see which way the wind blowed and vote in favour of it. And I put my hands up and I said, I was wrong. Of course I was wrong. And I have no problem with that whatsoever. Unfortunately, you must have missed the show on the 9th of January. I was just certain that we would sort of be the good boys of Europe again. As it turns out, we weren't. And I'll tell you what I did really underestimate is the power of the rural TDs that support the government, because I think it was their intervention that was critical, actually, in the stance that we took in relation to that. But I've no problem putting my hands up when I'm wrong. I was wrong, far out as Fanad Lighthouse. So Lisa Crawford, auntie of young David Curran, has given us an update on his condition. As you would know, Davin is currently in CHI Crumlin with myocarditis and cardiomyopathy, along with rhinovirus and parvovirus infections, because his heart and lungs are not able to function on their own right now. Davin is being supported by an ECMO machine, which is a form of life support used in critical situations. And the family have set up a GoFundMe to help alleviate the final pressure. And we've received this voice message update from Lisa Crawford.
Hi, all. Just a wee update on Davin's situation. Davin is still very ill in Our Lady's Hospital for sick children in Crumlin. He's currently getting the highest level of support care that can be given in Ireland. There may be a possibility that Davin may need to be transferred to the UK in the coming days. Thank you all for donating and sharing this GoFundMe. We are overwhelmed with the support. I will keep updating you all as often as I can. In the meantime, please keep sharing the GoFundMe. Please keep Davin and his parents in your prayers. We appreciate them all. Thank you.
And thank you, Lisa, for that update. And we are all thinking on you. And we wish you all the best. And we'll share that GoFundMe on our socials again if you wish to do as Lisa said there and donate or share it. On the Mercosur deal, just as we head towards the news, there's nothing sustainable about sending goods thousands of miles away in any direction. Who wants hormone-ridden meat or 100-day-old fish? Support local produce. But there are certain things that you do really need to import and export, and it is how things work. Just a couple of birthday requests as we go into the second hour. Happy belated birthday for yesterday to Abigail O'Loughlin, Hillary Top. Well, anyway, the name for sure is Abigail O'Loughlin. And the best wishes to you come in from Granny Orla, Great Granny Bridie, your two aunties, uncle, mum and two wee sisters, and our mother's best friend as well. Could you send 80th birthday wishes to Rosalie McCormick Capri for tomorrow from her favourite nephew? All right, Rosalie. Now, if you've more than one, you're going to have to figure out who that came from. Happy belated birthday for yesterday to Abigail O'Loughlin. I had that one already, and from the same people. OK, that's just a double print. More than happy to do that for you. Right, a lot of you complaining passing on information as it relates to traffic. There was a car broken down on the inbound right-hand lane of the dual carriageway into Letterkenny at Kelly's Toyota Garage. I'm not sure if that's been cleared yet, but we're still getting some indications that there is a traffic build-up. Right, son, merciful Greg, really laughable Ian saying the vote of the Irish people needs to be respected. Didn't we, the Irish people, vote no on the Lisbon Treaty? Well, we do have a habit of going back to the people when we don't like what they say. Could you ask the MEPs, what are they doing in Europe about the immigration problem in this country that's putting such a strain on every service going? Letterkenny is a prime example. There are a lot of immigrants here. And it's a pity not one representative can get the courage to speak up about it, silently letting it happen. More big housing projects started and we know who the majority of them will go to. I understand your concerns and I'm not in any way poo-pooing them. But there are public representatives, many of them in Donegal, that have spoken out about immigration into this county and the strain on services and the fact that until such time as services are improved, that the county really perhaps can't accommodate anymore. I've done the interviews with these elected representatives myself. In terms of housing, we've done a bit of a dive into this and we are assured that there are no queue jumping or no queue jumpers on the housing waiting list. But you might say, listen, they would say that, or you would say that. I'm only telling you what the official line is coming into us. Also, it's up to us what we do. You can't blame the MEPs. Europe has a certain policy as it relates to immigration. It is changing a little bit, but it's up to us what parts of it we do and don't sign up to as well. So if the truth be told, you know, that is a national government problem. Right, OK. The Irish Road Hauliers Association has written to county councillors urging them to submit motions of no confidence in the Road Safety Authority. Ger Hyland is president of the IRHA. It was interesting. We had the minister responsible for the Road Safety Authority on the show last week or the week before. Ger, not only are they not looking no longer to split up the RSA, they're looking to keep it as is. You're not in agreement with that.
Well, we're not. And the first thing I would point out here is a sure sign of madness is to use the same people to do the same thing to affect a different result. So, you know, why the government paid huge money to get an Indicon report done as to how they would reform and revamp the RSA. The Indicon report came back, was very damning on the RSA and suggested that it needed two separate bodies. The government cited cost being the contributory factor to the fact that they're not going to take the Indicon report on board. Our view here is that how do you cost road safety and how do you cost lives?
It'd be hard to stay in any job if you were overseeing such a dramatic increase in the amount of deaths on our roads, the amount of drink driving, drug driving detections, speeding detections, the lack of compliance with the law in that regard. the incredibly long wait for driving tests. In fact, they're facing some strike action from driving testers as well. And that's just part of it. I mean, it is, I think someone could argue, it is an association or an authority, sorry, that is pretty much failing on every marker there is to determine whether a system is working or not. So why do you think the government is sticking with this insanity, as you frame it?
Well, I don't know. The reason to give us was cost. And as I said to you, I don't know how you cost lives or a life. We had 185 people killed on our roads last year. Not alone that. The majority of families in this country has been discommoded by the inactions and the inactivity of the RSA over two decades. The length of time our young people are waiting for driving tests, it has had serious consequences, especially for rural Ireland. There's not a family, I'd say, in rural Ireland over the last 20 years that hasn't been affected by road fatalities, by our young people who are paying exorbitant insurance rates to have an L plate sitting on a car. They can't bring their car to college, to school, to work because they don't have a qualified driver to sit beside them. And, you know, to have these young people marooned in rural Ireland because they can't get a driving test is a damning indictment on not only on the RSA, but also our government.
There's another
our government
thing too,
are
as well.
Not listening.
Yeah, last year there was an awful lot of money spent. And, like, I don't even want to quantify it because this is what makes me find amusing. Not amusing in a funny way, but one of the big things that happened recently was a reduction of speed limits on certain roads. Now, they went down from 80 to 60. There's no policing of it, really. We installed signs on every little back road there is in this entire country. I'd love to know how much that cost. And whilst that was being done in that year, we saw this increase in road fatalities. So how could money be used as an excuse when money was literally wasted? Because the only way that money could be proven to have been beneficial was if we'd have seen a reduction in road traffic collisions, particularly on these types of roads, but we haven't. So who's going to take the blame for that massive bill for putting these signs up? Some signs that don't even have numbers on them, just lines that no one understands what they are. Who's going to take responsibility for that? And why not have spent that money in reforming the RSA?
There is no responsibility or accountability. You're talking about speed limit signs going up on rural roads. We've seen 80-kilometre signs being put on a rural road, where in fact the safe driving speed is probably 40 kilometres. We've seen 50-kilometre signs being put on the edge, a half a mile out from towns and villages. When, you know, 50 kilometres an hour is an absolute ridiculous speed that far out. Certainly when you get into the town and the village, certainly 50 kilometres an hour is probably the max speed you can do, or maybe a bit too much in cases. But common sense has to prevail. And a lot of these speed limit signs that went up were a knee-jerk reaction to a number of accidents that happened over maybe one weekend. And then they came out and decided, oh, we're going to reduce speed. Reducing speed is fine, but it has to have a sensible approach as well. And it has to have, to be fair, the guards in this country, and I have a huge respect for them, but they are very severely under-resourced.
Okay.
So, you know what I mean? Most of our major accidents are on country roads late at night. We have a driving test that's not fit for purpose. We have a young person to do 10 or 12 lessons, whatever they do. They can't even apply for a test until they have their 10 or 12 lessons done. The RSA are claiming now to have the test time down to 10 weeks. I guarantee you there'll be no member or no listener of your programme that's going to ring in when we finish talking to say they're getting a test in 10 weeks or under. And this is the type of nonsense that the RSA are going on with.
All right, so you're calling on local authority members, county councillors to forward motions of no confidence in the Road Safety Authority. It depends when you sent this letter to the councillors, I suppose, and when motions are submitted. At this point, you don't really know, do you, what kind of response you've had that from local authority members? What kind of response you've had to that?
Well, we don't, because the email only went out to all the councillors yesterday evening.
Understood. Okay.
There was an initiative taken by Kerry County Council last week, led by Kerry County Council. It wasn't prompted by me or my association to have a vote of no confidence in the RSA. And this is where I got my idea, because our local county councillors, they're on the ground, they're in touch with the people. We have a government who seems to be not listening to the people. And this is why I have turned to the county councillors to ask them to put a motion at their next county council meeting of no confidence in the RSA.
OK, Ger Hyland, president of the Irish Road Hauliers Haulage Association. If you have a view on the Road Safety Authority, maybe you're very much in favour of the work that they do. Maybe you think the reduction in speed limits was one of the greatest acts any authority or association has ever undertook. 086 60 25000, that's the WhatsApp and text number. Give us a call on 074 91 25000. On Mercosur, there's nothing sustainable about sending goods thousands of miles away in any direction. Who wants hormone ridden meats or 100-day-old fish? Hi Greg, I was on carers and working 15 hours a week. Then my mum died and then I took sick. I had to go to Beaumont Hospital for an operation on my head. I got a letter from Revenue. I could not understand it. I took it into the local accountant. I was told when working I had not paid enough tax. I owed €4,400, which I had to pay. I thought it very unfair, as I was employed for then 15 hours and tax took out my wages. I was not self-employed. I'm sorry about that. Maybe you could pass this to Greg Hughes and see what the public think. Is our National Saints Day being hijacked? What has hijabs got to do with St. Bridget? Right. World Hijab Day and St. Bridget's Day celebration, focusing on similarity, not difference. The 1st of February 2026, 2 p.m. to 4 p.m, Radisson Hotel, Letterkenny. What's it got to do with it? I would just say it's two people that two cultures hold in, or, you know, one, obviously St. Bridget's a culture, and the other, World Hijab Day, another culture celebrates that, and combining them for one event? I don't know. I haven't really thought about it too much, but some people believe it's no good. This caller says, this is disgraceful. These people have nothing in common with St. Bridget or our Christian beliefs. Letterkenny is disintegrating before our eyes. First the mosque and now this. Wake up, Letterkenny people, and put a stop to this. So another here, the celebration of St. Bridget's Day alongside the Muslim community where the World Hijab Day and St. Bridget's Day celebration is a shocking disgrace to a saint we've only honoured with a national holiday by Donegal County Library. What do you think about it, right? So just to try and describe what it is, it's an event on the 1st of February, Radisson Hotel, Letterkenny. They are combining St. Bridget's Day with World Hijab Day. And the subtext is focusing on similarity, not difference. Do you think that's an affront to Christianity or perhaps another religion? I don't know what you might think to that, but I don't see anything on the face of it, but maybe I don't understand. I just think it's maybe two cultures coming together to celebrate different events on the same day. But as I say, I've literally just become aware of it, so that's just my initial thought. I don't know. Let's get back to the road. Senator Manus Boyle of Fine Gael, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg, and good morning to your listeners.
We're back talking about road safety in the south of the county, and it's Keelogs National School in Inver. For those who may not have heard our previous chats about this, Manus, what's going on?
Basically, what's happening is during the busy times in the morning from 9 o'clock to, say, 9:30, and again then from 2:30 to 3 o'clock, people exiting from the school are finding it very hard to get out onto the N56 with the speed of traffic coming. And a lot of people have been on to me. There was an ear miss there last week. And, you know, it's something that really needs to be sorted out here and addressed. We also had, I don't know, did you hear, we also had an ear miss yesterday in Duncan Ely National School when a car went through a red light again. So it's really becoming a big issue in Donegal outside these schools. You know, you also have Frosses and Killymarder we had problems with in the past too. And we have also Killity National School. So along, as you say, the South Donegal, there's a lot of problems there at schools, you know.
Right, but what do we do about it? We're talking about this all of the while. These schools, a lot of these schools were there already, right? And these roads became busy around them. What are we going to do about it? Who's at fault? It's always the same convo, you know. Is it the TII? Is it the council? You can't put in speed ramps because there has to be a traffic study, and that traffic study is not going to happen at the moment. And on it goes until such time as, unfortunately, outside one of these schools, we are going to see a student lose their life, or maybe alongside a parent. So what? Who's going to take the responsibility for this and get it sorted?
Well, I think, Licky, everybody in Donegal, you know, the councillors and everybody in the council really knows that there's a problem here, and they are all pushing. I think it comes down, we have to put serious pressure on the Department of Transport to do traffic surveys and get things sorted outside schools. Now, you take Keelux, for instance, it's a 100-mile zone coming across Anver Bridge. I would know you would know that area well yourself. And coming the other way is 100. And all we have there is a steel sign with a child on it crossing the road. Like, there's far more could be done there to slow traffic down. Duncan Ely's a different kettle of fish with the traffic lights there. The TII is working on Duncan Ely. But there are also problems with the Department of Education there, so we're trying to work through them. I think it's an overall thing we really need to get everybody involved here to try and get these schools. At the end of the day, Greg, the children needs to go to school and know that they're safe. Like, I know I went to Duncan Ely National School and maybe I looked out the window too many times. But one time there, if you heard a car or a lorry coming up past Duncan Ely School, you would say, oh, who's that? Mm. Now it's just steady traffic. The amount of traffic that's on the road is unbelievable, you know. So something has to be done, and done fast.
Yeah, so what happens next then?
Well, I'm pushing the Department of Transport to do these surveys outside the school, and I'm looking for all Donegal politicians to fall in behind me here, that the problem schools, that we get to them as soon as possible, you know. There's no good in kicking the can down the road till something happens. The last thing I want is any child or any parent, anything to happen, anybody going to school. So I think this is the only way we're going to try and make progress, if we all come together and push the departments to do these surveys outside the school to see the volumes of traffic that's going past, and be honest, the speed of traffic that's going past too.
So Keelog School, is that the same as St. Noel's School or a separate school?
That's Keelog School's down off a number village.
All right, okay.
He looks down there. And it's a really good school. And being honest, it is about 500 yards off the main road.
Yeah, so your concern...
The problem is...
Exactly, but that's not 100K, right? It's off the main road, it's not 100K. No. Is the danger then as the traffic exits out onto the main Donegal town to Killybegs Road?
Exactly, Greg. Okay, right. Coming in the morning and exiting in the evening, that's where the problem is there, because the traffic's coming too hard around there, you know. So it's something that needs to be addressed and addressed very, very quickly.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it was that turn off or another one further up, but there was a very serious road traffic collision.
Exactly, Greg. I didn't like to say that, but you're 100% right.
It's about
50 yards up the road, there was a major accident.
Going back a number of years, but if there was any indication of how dangerous that can be, and turn-offs and turn-ins and turn-outs, there you go. Okay. What's your views on the Road Safety Authority? We're talking to the Irish Road Hauliers Association there. They want local authorities to debate motions of no confidence in the Road Safety Authority. This is separate, so I'm not tying them into this, but just curious whilst I have you on, and whilst you have an interest in road safety, what's the mood in the Shannon in relation to them?
Well, I think we all have to sit down here and try and get a plan that works. It's not going to work in every place, Greg. And, you know, road safety is a big thing in Donegal. And believe it or not, since I started travelling to Dublin, road safety along the whole way down is a problem. Like, you have people passing you, you know, on double white lines and going into corners. And, you know, there needs to be a whole, I think, education bit done for people on driving. Like, everybody's in a hurry now, if you know what I mean. You know, everybody, I don't think people even, they're not adhering to the rules of the road. You know, and the rules of the road needs to be put out there more. When you go to do your test, you're told this, that, and the other. But if you're 20 years away from it, after doing it, you know, you're inclined to forget. But I think there needs to be a whole new, like the ads that used to be on television before, telling people, like, on a double white line you can't pass. And there needs to be a whole new education on the whole thing.
Thanks very much for your time, Senator Manus Boyle there. Okay, we're joined on the programme now by 100% Redress County Councillor Tomás Sean Devine. Good morning to you. Thanks for holding, Tomás. Sorry about that.
No problem, Greg. Good morning to yourself and good morning to your listeners.
Right, okay. Democracy, it's a slow process of stumbling to the right decision instead of going straight forward to the wrong one. It's good, though, if we can see it in action. You're calling again for the public to have access to plenary meetings. Why is this important to you? Why are you raising it again?
Greg, it's probably an issue that I should never have to raise. It should have been always there from day one, you know. We have thousands and thousands of homeowners out there can't see what's happening on the defective concrete block committee meetings in Lufford, which is wrong. You invite people into the chamber. We have three seats for people to sit on in the chamber. There's no room there. People have a right, Greg, to see what their elected representatives are doing for them in the council chamber. And this is our call that these meetings are streamed live for people to go on and see what their representatives are doing for them and what's happening, keeping them up to date. What's going on in there, new progress or anything, they can see it themselves. Not everybody can travel to Lufford, Greg, to watch these meetings, so it's a no-brainer option for the council to live stream these meetings.
I think full council meetings are streamed. Why? What's the difference between a full council meeting and a plenary meeting? Well, actually, before we talk about it, I mean, I know one's streamed and one isn't, but what is a plenary meeting compared to a regular meeting?
Well, the plenary meeting is a full council meeting where all the councillors attend, Greg, every 2 months. They air their motions and talk about updates
streamed,
and stuff
no?
and that.
They're not already streamed.
They are streamed live, yeah. Them's all streamed live. That's what we can't understand. What's the difference? The staff here, the technology, everything's there. They live stream these defective concrete blocks. We all know it's a big humanitarian crisis. They have done it all. Thousands and thousands of affected homeowners, businesses, groups, whatever is affected by it. And they're not streaming live in this meeting, and there seems to be a resistance there to stream these meetings.
Yeah, can I just apologise? I've got things mixed up. I've went to so many blooming plenary meetings. I know exactly what they are. You're using the next plenary meeting, which will be streamed, to call for defective concrete block meetings to be streamed. And you being told as to why they're not being streamed up until now, the defective concrete block meetings, Tomás?
These meetings, Greg, and the last term of council were streamed live. And this term of council, they've stopped. And I know all meetings on the last term of council was all online meetings, with COVID and with everything going through at that stage. And now it's stopped, and this term of council, for some reason, we don't know, Greg. And then they've been told it's cost. So a question was from myself and Councillor Joy Beard in recent months, asking the cost of these meetings, and we got back figures that the cost of the meetings that were streamed last year cost €22,500.
Right, well, here's the thing. I'll do it for $6,000. Yeah. How's that?
Yeah.
I'm not joking.
But I'm saying, look,
I know, I'm genuine. Yeah. I am literally not joking. I do it every single day here on Highland Radio. If you want me to come up and stream the concrete block meetings, I'll do it for $6,000 a year. That'll save you what? That'll save you, and I'm not even a professional, that'll save you $16,000 a year. There's no way to stream stuff that much.
No.
Once you have the infrastructure in place, which would be more than covered, more than covered by 22 grand. And in fact, it does need to be improved because I think the quality of streaming is not fantastic. There is no cost in actually streaming it then because there's no cost to Facebook, YouTube, or wherever you might send them. So if you want to let them know, I'll do it for six. In fact, because it's Defective Concrete Blocks meetings, I'll probably do it for free. My point being is there's no excuse.
No, there's not, Greg. And that's been quite honest about it. There is no excuse. You know, these meetings last a couple of hours. Now, in fairness, the last meeting we had last week lasted well into the afternoon, which was a very productive meeting and was very the BPFI in it. But as I say, Greg, there's no excuse. These meetings need to be streamed live. I'm asking the councillors to back this motion once and for all on Monday and put an end to this and let the homeowners watch what's going on in it and let them get up to date what's going on from the housing agency, whatever updates that come down to them meetings, that the homeowners can see what's happening.
All the executive could say, do you know what? You know, we really should be streaming those meetings. Why have it go to a council meeting, have it debated, have that streamed, make it look like once again that the victims of defective concrete blocks are being further victimised? Why wait to Councillor Thomas Sean Devine raises this in the council chamber and all the flack and all the negative publicity that might come from that? Why not just do what was being done before and stream the blooming meetings? It's not complicated, and you know, the positive publicity would far outweigh the cost, I would argue. Now, I know there are balance sheets, but this is a no-brainer. This is common sense, Thomas. And who needs the bad blowback from this motion that you'll bring into the council in good faith? No one does.
Greg, we're asked every day of the week that why it's not streamed, what are they hiding, you know, and you're constantly explaining to people what's going on. And that shouldn't
Yeah, but this is a problem with communication. Nothing's being hidden. That's the thing. The decision's not because there's any secrets. And it's not even, unless you're affected, the meetings probably aren't even that interesting. It's got nothing to do with hiding anything, transparency. Someone has made a bookkeeping decision. It's quite costly for the council in terms of their public reputation. There's no need for it. There's nothing to hide.
No, there's not, Greg. And I hope it passes on Monday, Greg, and it's put to bed once and for all. And as I say, this is the third time this motion is coming on. It's the second time from myself, and it was brought on by Councillor Declan Mahan as well. And as I say, it shouldn't be. It was supposed to be discussed and further talk about it. Never happened, Greg. So the motion has to come forward again. And I would rather be discussing other stuff on Monday, Greg. I didn't have to put a motion in about that. Never should have been a motion to start off with. But again, it has to be put on. So I'm hoping, Greg, this one is the last, and the next meetings will be live streamed from now on.
All they need to is one 360 degree camera centrally in the middle of that building, decent mics. It's really not complicated to do it very effectively. And as I say, there's no cost to stream it on Facebook or socials anyway, because that is... Thomas, again, it's a shame that the council don't do the right thing on this. They don't need the bad press. There's no need for it. Hopefully common sense will prevail. Look after yourself. Thank you very much indeed for that. Noel was on to say the main road from McClay's Corner to Nina Models is in bad need of repair. It seems to be an ongoing thing. Roads in the Finn Valley area. Speaking of attending plenary meetings, I've been here 22 years now, which I really feel quite remarkable because I actually still feel like a complete nut of blowing. Would you believe that? And I'm on about in Highland Radio, not in Donegal. I've been here my whole life. For years, it was like, you know, those roads are some of the busiest, and yet they seem to be some of the worst. I wonder, do we divvy up the money right? I know that was debated an awful lot. On the issue of gender, the judge was out of order in dysmorphia case. If you want to be renamed, respect that. However, this they thing is ridiculous. Now, if she went to hospital, she'd have to be treated for the gender she was born, not the one she's reassigned. Or am I wrong, Greg? I'm not really quite sure. I mean, obviously, in terms of being treated, you know, if you identify as a male but you've got a problem with your ovaries, you're going to be treated as a biological female, aren't you? So I'm not really quite sure. Hello, can I get more info on this? Highland Radio has gone off the Alexa app again. Happened a few times this week. Hi, Highland Radio has gone off the Alexa app again. I don't know what's going on. We'll get it looked into. Is it just the Alexa app? By the way, let me put it out to you. If you're listening on your phone or if you're listening on a Google speaker or an Alexa speaker, or maybe you're listening to the stream on the website, have you had any issues with it over the last wee while? Please let me know. And if you have, the problems ongoing? Re-transgender use of the bathroom. I'm a nurse. I worked in the United States of America. I worked in Letterkenny Hospital for years and Beaumont Hospital as a nurse. Greg spoke of a transgender case. The judge used the dead name of a student that transitioned from female to male. The psychologist that said the transgender man was biologically a female. Has anyone heard of the Harry Benjamin standards for people transitioning? They had to follow these standards, live as a male or female for 2 years before a doctor would consider gender reassignment surgery. Did the psychologist follow the Harry Benjamin standards? Are they obliged to? I really don't know, to be honest with you. And I don't think that judge would have considered the use of that name as a dead name. I know that's when you use the old name of a transgender person. It's from that perspective, it's one of the worst things that you can do. Chris Ashmore of the Highland Radio Business Matters podcast. Good morning to you. How art thou?
I'm very good, Greg.
Good, good, good. Let's get to some news. And the question is, are you interested in starting a retail food or drink band? Is this like Chris's Crisps? Or?
Oh, it could be. It could be. Yes, indeed. Now, there's a food starter program which is coming up shortly. It's on Zoom, 2nd of February. It begins, that's on Monday. And it's linked in with the Super Value Food Academy. And essentially, this is a program open to what they call pre-startups or those who are trading for up to 24 months. So maybe you have a food or a drink that you are developing. It's a chance to get in with Super Value. So it could be one for you. €25 is the cost. There's a limited number of places, and you can contact the local enterprise office for more details on that. Now, that ties in with another thing that's also coming up that's called the Lidl Kickstart Supplier Development Programme. And again, this is a possible pathway into their 234 stores around the country. A number of Donegal businesses have participated in this before, and a representative from Lidl will host an information session that's, again, go on to the local enterprise office for the details on that. So that's two things that if you're in that sector, that could be a good opportunity.
Yeah, for sure. More and more of us across the county are installing solar panels.
Yes, now there's figures just out from the SEAI who grant aid a lot of the panels and various things there to make your homes warmer and to help the whole greening of things. And last year, Greg, 792 households in Donegal installed solar panels. And just when you're out on the road, there seems to be a lot of vehicles out there at the moment. There's the national companies, there's local companies, and there were actually over 800 grants for a home solar awarded in the county, so all a little bit of a time lag to getting the grant and then getting it done. Nationally, 33,000 people getting grant aid. How much is a grant? Well, at the moment, you can get a grant of about up to €1,800. Mm. And the typical cost for a home is probably in the region of €7,000 or €8,000. So you're out about 6,000.
There's green loans as well.
And there's green loans, yeah. Usually at a preferential rate. And certainly there's an encouragement there.
Right. And so if any of you thousand out there that got the solar panels in 2025, I know some of you are listening, what's your experience been like? Is it money well spent? Is it to save money? Is it for hot water? Did you get batteries as well, which can add the cost, but it means that maybe you can use the power generated at times that suit you better? So some of you are a year in, 6 months in to having solar panels on your roof. Let us know, 086 60 25,000. What's the experience been like for you? Would you recommend it? Has it been money well spent? Or maybe you just feel that, you know, it isn't necessarily about saving money, but it's about me drawing down less power from the grid, which is often reliant on the burning of gas, etc., unless we start pumping it in from Spain, and then it'll all be solar.
Yeah, and you know, it's worth pointing out that if you have a surplus of power, you can feed back into the electricity network. I know somebody who got the panels, and You may recall last May, Greg, was a particularly sunny month. We had great weather, and their electricity bill for the month of May was €6. And this is a four-bedroom house.
Not bad, not bad, of course. Right, now, house prices. This is... There's so many of these indexes come out. Some are asking prices, some are sold prices. The medium, this median thing whereby they give the price of a house in Donegal, and you couldn't get a house in Donegal for that price, but apparently there's some logic to it. But anyway.
Yeah, the latest of these guides, the Sunday Times has released its nationwide property guide. It's predicting that in 2026, we're going to see a 2 to 4%. Price rise in your typical house in Donegal, which would be below the national average of 5.3, the rise there. Now, interestingly, they have put a top 10 of the most affordable places in the country to get a house.
Leitrim, Donegal,
yes, three-bedroom semi-detached. Mohill in Leitrim came out €175,000. Now, interesting, Letterkenny was in the top 10 there. They're saying that you can still get a three-bedroom semi-detached second-hand for €200,000.
No, you can't. No, this is the median thing. That whole baseline has been set up wrong, Chris.
Yeah. Now, I know a house that was a three-bedroom house in the town here that was sold for exactly €200,000 within the last 2 months. It's a terraced house.
A terrorist house.
Oh,
right. So it had a big balaclava over its roof.
But we have a situation now that you can buy some second-hand properties that would cost you far more if you were to build them from scratch. And there lies one of the issues, that there's a shortage of second-hand properties.
Well, if there are, it's a lot of money, right? But if there are three bed semis in Letterkenny going for €200,000, then we don't have a housing crisis. In this area.
We do have a housing crisis because we don't have
it. How could we? How, if you can buy a three bed semi for €200,000,
but isn't enough of them on the market, and
that should drive the price up. That means that house should be worth €275,000 because the market should determine that.
Well, the price is going up because if you look back, I know this area quite well, the area that I'm talking about, and I have sort of watched with interest because the prices have gone up constantly. And
it's interesting. And listen, again, I'm probably misreading things. Can we fast forward now to what's on this week's podcast?
Yes, on this week's podcast, I've been speaking to Anna Marie Brosi, who is a coaching psychologist and a well-being specialist. Now, she helps her clients achieve their goals as they strive for success in business and in their personal lives. And on Friday, January the 30th, she'll be speaking at a business and leadership breakfast, which has been hosted by Letterkenny Chamber at the Century Complex here in the town. And the theme is Strategies to Thrive 2026. Now, she deals with a range of clients from the self-employed to big business and can help in areas ranging from burnout prevention to managing stress. And I think we have a clip from the programme where she outlines four key factors that can help improve your life.
There are four basic things that, you know, us humans need if we are to physically, mentally and emotionally flourish and thrive. And one of them is sleep. You know, we all need a good night's sleep. You know, the body wakes up fresh the next morning and able to face another day. And then the second thing is our food, you know, what we put into our body and our eating habits, because that really impacts the quality of our lives as well. And then we have exercise and movement, because this is so important, not just for our physical body, but for our mental and emotional well-being as well. You know, when we do exercise, and that can be walking or dancing or swimming or anything at all, it just allows our body to shift its physiological state, if you like, and puts us back into our bodies as opposed to into our heads. And then the fourth thing is how we manage stress. You know, what are our healthy coping strategies for managing our daily stress? Because we don't want this stress to build up cumulatively in our bodies or, you know, in our minds, because it just becomes very hard to, I suppose, function well and to feel well.
All right, that podcast will be available for you very shortly in the Listen Back section on our website, highlandradio.com. It's also available for you on Spotify and iTunes. So go to those platforms and give it a like there if you want to be reminded exactly when a new episode is posted. And it's broadcast on Sunday, Chris.
That's right, Greg, after the 6 o'clock news on Sunday.
Oh, a text has just come in. What if I want to contact Chris about the show?
You can email me is the best way, and the address is businessmatters@highlandradio.com.
I didn't really get that text. We don't make them up on this show. But listen, anyway, thanks very much, Chris. I do appreciate it. Look after yourself. Chris Ashmore will be back. Is it Thursdays now, yeah? We speak to you on Thursdays?
We do, indeed. Okay,
brilliant
we
stuff. Do. Right, I've got some good news for you. Thanks to you, the listeners. We did an appeal earlier on today in relation to Martin Tran, who had been reported missing. It was incredibly out of character for him, but the family knew he had come to Donegal. And just as we were discussing it, a couple of people were listening, and many since, to say that his vehicle had been spotted and... we managed to get people to speak to him to make contact with his partner, Anna, because he didn't have his phone with him. And Martin has now contacted his partner, Anna, and is on his way home. So thank you so very much to those of you listening who spotted the van, who spotted Martin, who got in touch with us. It hadn't been elevated to the Garda Síochána yet, so we were able to put Martin in contact with his partner, Anna, and all's well that ends well. Thank you very much indeed to that, for that. Thank you very much indeed, listeners. Back tomorrow morning at 9.